Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
The generations and this day, we want to make it a better place for our children, so that they know it's a better world for them. I think they can make it a better place.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. Brighter than tomorrow. And if you give it a try, you'll find there's no need to cry. Feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are ways to get there if you care enough for the living. Make a little space.
Well, good evening. Make it a better place for you and for me. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. I'm your host, Delia Farquharson, and it's a tough topic this evening, but it's a necessary one because I think it's going to take tough conversations like this and many other things to promote change and to bring things to light and to build awareness. But before we get into our topic this evening, let me say hello and good evening to my guest co-host, my awesome husband, Raymond. Hello, Raymond.
Hello, Delia.
So, Raymond, it's a tough topic. It really is. You know, it affects me on so many levels. But the name for our listening audience, and remember you can call in live on 619-639-4621. That's 619-639-4621. The name for our listening audience is Natasha McKenna, a 37-year-old woman in Virginia who is dead and whose 7-year-old daughter will grow up without a mother. And it is profoundly sad, but I think also it was so avoidable that this tragedy was so avoidable. So for those of you who don't know the story, as it goes, and I've read a couple of the reports, but as it goes, Natasha McKenna was... She had contact with the police where she was making a claim that she had been harassed or hurt by the police, that she had been, you know, abused by the police. And when they went to meet with her, when the police went to meet with her, they found out that she had an outstanding warrant for assaulting a police officer. She claimed that the police officer had assaulted her. When the police went, they found out she had an outstanding warrant for assaulting a police officer in Alexandria. She was arrested and taken to jail. And while there, now she has to be transported from Fairfax back to Alexandria. And the police tried unsuccessfully to get her into a wheelchair. And when she wouldn't cooperate, the reports are that she would resist, that she would violently resist. That was in the records, that she would violently resist if she would, you know, if they tried to take her. And so when they tried to put her in this wheelchair and she wouldn't bend her legs, one police deputy sheriff tased her 4 times. She had some kind of medical emergency. She was taken to the hospital, and she died a few days later. According to USA Today, while she was being tased or while she was being transported, the police, I'm going to read it from the report. It says, the report then says 6 deputies dressed in biohazard suits and gas masks came in to try and subdue her. They attempted to put her in a wheelchair with restraints, but she wouldn't bend her knees. That's when an officer used a stun gun 4 times on McKenna. According to the report, she was also in leg shackles and a mask, and she was handcuffed at the time of the incident. Now, this is a woman who, according to her family, had a documented history of mental illness. So she was diagnosed as a schizophrenic or with schizophrenia. And this is just really sad. You know, so you wonder what happened. How does someone go from assault, you know, charges of assault on both sides, to being dead? How does that happen? And what needs to happen, what needs to be put in place to avoid something like this ever happening again? Raymond, what say you?
I mean, my problem is, you know, they will keep happening till we hope they don't happen anymore. You know, because, you know, folks might be quick to say, well, you know, we have a 20% decrease over last year or whatever it might be. But as I was asking before we started the program about, you know, is it just training that these people don't have, or is it that even when they are trained, there are situations where they're not adhering to the training, they are not assessing objectively, and they are not objectively, you know, approaching and dealing with and you know, dealing with the situation in the context of their training.
Well, you know what? I don't know the details of this, the illness that this woman and the condition that she struggles with.
Mm.
But I'll tell you, if she's diagnosed with schizophrenia, maybe she's paranoid.
Mm.
Who knows? Maybe she has hallucinations. Who knows what's going on with her?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that she's mentally ill. And the fact is that part of it, I think, is the stigma that exists. The minute you hear that someone is mentally ill and may have, or maybe, you know, it's in the records, she tends to be violent. So officers are going there with masks and...
Yeah, even that I don't understand.
That alone, for some...
Is she contagious? I mean...
But just think about it. For someone who may be frightened or paranoid,
yeah.
Or...
Did you just help or hurt or escalate?
Can you imagine that
sight? Anybody.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's really... So I think stigma plays a role.
Yeah, that even to me, someone would have to seriously explain why you are, you know, approaching someone who is, even if they're not mentally, but for whatever reason, you're in a biohazard suit. No one called a Ebola outbreak, but you're approaching me in masks and hoods, and that is absolutely unnecessary and absolutely crazy. So even that they need to explain.
So, you know, so I think, and this is part of it for me, is that as soon as someone hears that someone has a mental illness or has a mental condition or an emotional, that immediately the guards go up, and it's just this scary thing, and you know, and so yeah, you're right, Raymond. The question is, what kind of training did these deputies have?
Mm-hmm.
How were they prepared? How are they prepared to deal with someone who has a mental illness?
Well, I thought about it as you were saying it. How about this? The way they were dressed and their goggles and their...
Is the training.
Is part of the training. So, they might then come back and said, things might be thrown at us, bodily fluids,
speaking, right?
And we have no idea.
Therefore, we're putting our lives at risk. So, therefore, it's best to take this approach.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're right. That may be.
It's the protocol.
Right. The protocol is you must be prepared. You must protect yourself. But can you imagine if someone is paranoid? Maybe, who knows? Let's just say, for example, that she hallucinates and she thinks, or she has delusion. Or she thinks that aliens are coming.
Okay, so there they are.
But, you know, so it could be anything. And so approaching that person in that defensive stance when they may be most distressed, maybe she's not taking her medication. So who knows what's going on in her mind? Her disconnection with reality.
One might beg the question then, you know, what's best practice? What are the... I'm having a hard time giving them the benefit of the doubt.
But you see, what I'm saying is...
training.
Okay, go ahead.
But in terms of, you know, you have multiple, hundreds of police departments throughout these United States. You have, you know, even within one state, you know, is there consistency in training? Is there best practice? Is it validated? Is it tested? Is it modified? You know, is it ongoing training? You know, I mean, how you train for a prisoner escaping is different. It can't be the same. You know, so does it rise to the level of significance, or it's just we'll just deal with it as it falls into anything else? And maybe there are opportunities, I don't know, for, you know, proper training.
Absolutely.
You know.
But clearly, okay, with the outcome that we've had, clearly this is not a successful execution of duty. Right? Because I cannot believe that the intent was to kill this woman. So
no.
I'm not saying that they intended to kill her, but this is the unfortunate and tragic circumstances of the actions that were taken. So clearly something needs to be done. And the question then becomes, why? What? Because how do you respond when someone has mental distress? You know, what do you do? And were they aware of this? I'm sure she seems to have a family because they've hired a lawyer. I'm saying, would that family not have stood up or explained or sought assistance from somebody to say, okay, she's not taking her medication, she's diagnosed with schizophrenia, she needs help. You know, she was 5'2 and 130 pounds. So it's not like she was a tower of a woman. It took 6 deputies.
And I think if they knew that, be careful, she will resist, it had to have been in the same context of saying, yeah, she's mentally ill and she tends to resist. How is that? So therefore, you're not just knowing that she, whatever they were sharing, or they could have skipped it up. But I'm just saying, they should have been more, I don't know, it's all these things that they should have been more responsible, they should be more careful, they should, you know, recognize the situation, that they assess. Yes, I mean, police, I'm sure they're trained to do this, I'm positive they are. You assess the situation and you act appropriately.
Can I say that part of it is that she was black, but not only that, there's a video, there's a 45-minute video of this incident.
What?
But it hasn't seen the light of day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
there's a video of what happened, but it has not been shown. Now, I say that if this video was going to exonerate somebody...
It would have been shown by now.
It would have been shown by now.
Wow, so there is a video.
Yeah, there's a video. So that in itself makes me... concerned, you know, about what might have transpired, because, you know, she was tased. There's up to 5 times. She lost consciousness. She never regained consciousness. She died 5 days later. I mean, there's no reasonable explanation for that. There's no. So then the question becomes, all right then, so because mental illness is so prevalent, and people might think it's only black people have mental illness, but it's not true. Everybody have mental illness. It's the statistics, I think, are 1 in 6 So it's because, so we either are, we either have a mental illness, know somebody who have a mental illness, mm-hmm. or have somebody in our family who has a mental illness.
Or all of the above.
But none of us escapes this association. None of us escapes it.
It's inevitable.
Right? So because we don't escape it then, you know, we have to start to think about it. When confronted with a situation like that, where mental illness is part of the problem,
mm-hmm.
how do you deal with it? How do you manage it?
I don't know, resources and so on and so forth, and how can we, cover all our bases, therefore do we have to prioritize, and, you know, it's a smaller percentage, so therefore so on and so forth. However, I think just like how these shootings are, thanks to all these videos that are being shown, so I can't imagine how many more people have been killed and things thrown on them and they're gone to jail or they're dead and it doesn't really come to the light of day. I think, I don't know who needs to champion this mental illness in terms of a significant group, but it has to be more than just it happened. Sorry, this is not what we meant. We're going to go train our officers. It has to be more than just that.
You're right. That it really needs to be more than that, and we need to have a conversation about it. We need to have, people need to be armed with information, because if you haven't already, say, gone to the hospital with somebody who is mentally distressed, you know, chances are it will happen at some point, right? It will happen. And then what? How do you respond? What do you do? Right? What do you do, women? How do you respond? And so I think that's if nothing else, that's what I want us to kind of focus on, is that it's really important to communicate. It's really important to be there, to be witnessing. It's really important to be advocating and to be assertive, because, you know, you don't want your loved one to end up like Miss McKenna. So you really have you because they cannot speak for themselves, because they may have a break with reality, it's really important that you are there and that you are involved and that you are focused on what's happening. Right?
Mm-hmm. I agree. But I wonder, though, I mean, for example, even in our own town, how much are they, let's say, the police officers here? They might be, appropriately and adequately trained in dealing with people who are mentally ill. And the range, it doesn't exist in just, extremes. There are a range of
mm-hmm.
things, I'm sure, and people in different states of wellness, to deal with the mentally ill population that crosses their path, and how effective has it been? Because God forbid, it happens and it does with it. Death, people dying from how they're dealing with you. If she didn't die, we probably never wouldn't have heard about how they
would
have beaten her and whatever else, and she's thrown in jail, and probably wouldn't. Assuming no video, it's just another mad black woman who acted out, and they had to restrain her.
And there's one version of that
story.
There's one version of that story, but I think that part of it is understanding, and this is a question that citizens can ask their city councils or ask the mayor's office or find out from the police department, what kind of training
mm-hmm.
is being done for our police force to address people who are mentally distressed?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of training, what kind of specialized training is our police force getting in order to deal with these situations? Because it needs specialized skills. If somebody had broken, she had broken her foot, they would have sent for an orthopedic surgeon, right? They would have gotten her a doctor. So think about it in the same way. And I think that's part of it, is that, as a society, we continue to think about mental illness as this foreign thing. You know, at this thing where, you know, and I think...
it's so true, you know, because on so many levels, it's true in terms of how the society deals with it. Even how physicians, even though psychiatrists and healthcare providers, how easy is it to find a doctor that takes your insurance, you know, to treat mental illness or to find someone, a hospital with an open bed for mental illness. That it is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you broke your foot, anyone in the hospital in the ER can treat you, put a cast on you, send you to an orthopedic surgery, admit you, know that you're doing surgery tomorrow, plan of action. That's done. Mental illness is like you become
a pariah.
Exactly.
You know, and that's part of it.
So many different.
And that's part of it, because I think that as a society, this is the stigma, right? This is the stigma that exists, where people are just like, okay, you know, it's mental illness means that there's a, you know, it's scary, and it's horrible, and it's bad, and I must be afraid. You know, and no. If anything else, I mean, and that's not to say that they're not people who are really deranged. Yeah, but the situation has to be assessed, and again, that's where the professionals come in, where we have people who can appropriately assess the situation and determine a sound and a safe approach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can't just do it where it's just like, We need a sound and a safe approach. So I think that's really important in understanding, you know, what the situation demands. What does the situation demand in terms of, you know, what does the situation demand
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, expertise? What does the situation demand in terms of expertise?
Right. And I think it needs to move beyond the knee-jerk reaction when these things occur. And I would think it's not all about funding. So say, well, we can't, you know, it's not all about that in terms of funding things for people to be able to get the appropriate trainers and being able to do the appropriate training and so on. I think an effort needs to be made by every city, every town, every village, you know, to deal with it, to appropriately respond. Like you said, if a cat is stuck in a tree, right, there's a protocol you follow
right.
to protect the cat.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I venture to say that most cities and most municipalities have better ordinances about dealing with stray animals and better processes and policies in dealing with stray animals than they do with dealing with someone who's mentally ill. And that's really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate that Ms. McKenna had to suffer this indignity, this sadness, this tragedy, and she's lost her life as a result. And her poor daughter, who must grow up without a mother.
Right.
You know, I think that's really sad. You know, I think that's really sad. And so, you know, what's our takeaway? What do we want others to think about when we think about Natasha McKenna? And I hope, you know, we noticed that there hasn't been any rallying cry. Right?
I didn't know about it until you had mentioned.
Yeah, there's no rallying cry.
I guess the smoking gun is the video.
Yeah.
So there is really, currently there's no smoking gun. But for me, in terms of takeaway and what I would like to see, I think each one of us, you know, having questions answered in terms of not just the police, but the fire department, or all these folks who have interaction with our citizens,
with our fellow citizens and everyone else who have mental illness, you know, and the training, questioning that, you know, adequately, appropriately trained, and how do you know if it's working, and so on and so forth. Not for them to hide it if they haven't had the training, but to say, you know what, you can help us advocate as the citizens of this city or this town or this village to have it done, have the powers that be, the leadership, recognize that it's needed,
right,
and shine light on it.
And I think that's why, you know, the emotional and the mental wellness week that we're having or we're putting on here in Mount Vernon is really an important thing, because I think just bringing to light the issue of mental illness is an important thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because it forces us to look at how this issue is handled. How is it handled? And I think that it needs greater attention at a state and a federal level in terms of, maybe they need greater lobbyists and, you know, SAMHSA and Office of Mental Health and all these agencies need greater, you know, bigger lobbyists to say, yeah, we need greater attention to this problem. You know, we do need greater attention to this problem. I mean, 130 pounds, 5'2", she should not have lost her life. Yeah, she should not have lost her life. You know, and it could have been handled differently had someone paused to reflect on what was happening in the situation. Because if she was shackled, and if she was handcuffed, and if she had on a spit mask, well, how could she be resisting? In what way could she be resisting? And what was going through her mind? What was going through her mind? What was she thinking and feeling at that time? Right? Did anybody ask? Did anybody care what Natasha McKenna was feeling at that time? And what was going on with her? And could there have been another way to get her to cooperate? Could there have been another way to get her to listen to the instructions of the police officers? What was the prior relationship with these police officers?
They probably had their own bias. And
they probably did.
And preconceived ideas, and the neighborhood that she lives in, she's mentally ill, she's of color. You know, all the things that go into the subconscious bias, even if you ask them, no, we never.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating, and it's very sad that people lose their lives
in
such a way.
Right. And I think, though, that it was important for us to talk a little bit about Natasha McKenna. And to bring her name forward, right, for her, but I think that I would like her death to signify a turning point in this process. So I hope that you will, read more about it, perhaps write to your congresspeople, perhaps ask your city leadership about how they handle mental health, mental illness, and what the protocols are. You know, so if nothing else, I think, that can move the conversation forward. So until next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com and like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at Discussion Delia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and bliss.